Just before you were leaving, was there another course change?
No.
Well, we had 219, 200, and was there another one?
180.
Okay. Now, when you were told, who told you to go to 180?
The captain.
Okay. Did he give you any instructions about steering that course?
Steady up on 180 and put it on the mic, which is the gyro.
Gyro? Did you think that was unusual or normal?
It was a little unusual.
Now, when did the next watch come up, the AB people on watch? When did they come up?
At 10 minutes 12, 23:50.
Okay. Were you relieved right away?
Bob Kagan relieved me. He came up a few minutes early, and he had forgotten his jacket. He went down to get his jacket and then came back and relieved me.
Do you know where the lookout was going to be posted?
No.
Do you know who the next two people on the next watch were?
Yes, it was. It was Bob Kagan and Maureen Jones.
Okay. Okay. Did you see her come up into the wheelhouse?
Yes.
Did she take over lookout before Bob Kagan relieved you on the hill?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Can you give me the procedures you follow when you relieve as helm? What reports do you make, and what do you discuss with the person that's relieving you?
Well, I had just steadied up on the course on 180 when Bob arrived, and had just punched in the gyro, and I just repeated that I was being relieved 180 on the gyro, because we had just steadied up on it.
Were you satisfied that Mr. Kagan understood that you were on gyro steering and he understood the course?
Yes.
After he took over the helm, what do you do?
I went below.
Did you have to report to the mate or the master on watch?
Well, they were both right there.
They were both up there? Did you report to them, that telling them that you were relieved?
Yes.
The third mate, this morning when he testified, said he was a little surprised that the vessel was on hand steering. Were you the one who informed them that the vessel, on gyro steering? Were you the one that informed that the vessel was on gyro steering when you were relieved?
Yes.
After relief, you went down below. What did you do?
I went down the mess decks and had something to drink and then just walked around the ship a little while.
Did you go to your room?
Not right away.
Now, how were you aware that the vessel had grounded?
I ran into the pumpman in one of the passageways, and he had told me.
Pardon me?
I ran into the pumpman in one of the passageways, and he told me that the ship was aground.
Okay. There wasn't any general alarm or PA announcement of that?
No.
Did you see other people walking around advising the crew that the vessel had grounded?
No. Not at that time.
Do you know what time the pumpman told you about the grounding? Did you look at a watch?
No, I don't wear a watch.
Okay. We're listening to testimony from
the
helmsman who has said that it was the captain who gave him the orders to go into the headings that headed them towards Bligh Reef. There's also been some talk about what's called the gyro. This is the automatic pilot that it's thought may have played a part in this incident.
Now, what is the Exxon policy for drinking on board?
There's no alcohol allowed on board ships.
Okay. How do you compare the Exxon Valdez enforcement of this policy to other vessels?
I don't think I could make a comparison.
Okay. How is it enforced? Is it rooms searched, or are rooms only searched when someone has been caught drinking, or how is it enforced on that vessel?
I've only been with Exxon a year and a half. I've never been on a ship where a room was searched or bags were searched as people were coming aboard.
After the vessel grounded, you were informed of the grounding. Were you given any guidelines or instructions, or did you have to do anything?
No.
Did you go back to bed?
Well, I stayed up for a little while longer, and then I went to my room.
And when did you have to go back on watch again?
At 8 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm. You know, he was there with the 180 course change.
No, I don't know.
Okay. Did you hear any radio communications between the captain and the Coast Guard concerning ice?
I remember something mentioned about ice, and that was about it. I don't remember the entire conversation.
Were you given any course change after that radio conversation between the captain and the Coast Guard?
I don't know whether it was prior to the course changes or after the course changes.
Did you have to call the next watch?
I don't think I had to, but I did.
You did? Do you call the ABs and the next mate, or just the ABs?
Just the ABs.
Is that your normal practice?
Yes.
Does the mate normally call the next mate on for his relief?
Yes.
Just before you were leave, was there another course change?
No.
We had 219, 200... And was there another one?
180.
Okay. Now, when you were told, who told you to go to 180?
The captain.
Okay. Did he give you any other instructions about steering that course?
Steady up on 180 and put it on the mic, which is the gyro.
Gyro? Did you think that was unusual or normal?
It was a little unusual.
Now, when did the next watch come up, the AB people on watch? When did they come up?
At 10 minutes to 12, 23:50.
Okay. Were you relieved right away?
Bob Kagan relieved me. He came up a few minutes early, and he had forgotten his jacket. He went down to get his jacket and then came back and relieved me.
Do you know where the lookout was going to be posted?
No.
Do you know if she who the next two people on the next watch were?
Yes, it was Bob Kagan and Maureen Jones.
Good. Okay, did you see her come up into the wheelhouse?
Yes.
Did she take over lookout before Bob Kagan relieved you on the helm?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Can you give me the procedures you follow when you relieve as helm? What reports do you make, and what do you discuss with the person that's relieving you?
Well, I had just steadied up on the course on 180 when Bob arrived, and had just punched in the gyro, and I just repeated that I was being relieved 180 on the gyro, because we had just studied up on it.
Were you satisfied that Mr. Kagan understood that you were on gyro steering and he understood the course?
Yes.
Uh, After he took over the helm, what do you do?
I went below.
Did you have to report to the mate or the master on watch?
Well, they were both right there.
They were both up there? Did yes. you report to them, that telling them that you were relieved?
Yes.
Third mate, this morning when he testified, said he was a little surprised that the vessel was on hand steering. Were you the one who informed him that the vessel, on gyro steering? Were you the one who informed that the vessel was on gyro steering when you were relieved?
Yes.
After relief, you went down below. What did you do?
I went down the mess decks and had something to drink and then just walked around the ship a little while.
Did you go to your room?
Not right away.
Now, how were you aware that the vessel had grounded?
I ran into the pumpman in one of the passageways, and he had told me.
Pardon me?
I ran into the pumpman in one of the passageways, and he told me that the ship was aground.
Okay. There wasn't any general alarm or PA announcement of that?
No.
Did you see other people walking around advising the crew that the vessel had grounded?
No. Not at that time.
Do you know what time the pumpman told you about the grounding? Did you look at a watch?
No, I don't wear a watch.
We're listening to testimony from the helmsman who has said that it was the captain who gave him the orders to go into the headings that headed them towards Bligh Reef. There's also been some talk about what's called the gyro. This is the automatic pilot that it's thought may have played a part in this incident.
Now, what is the Exxon policy for drinking on board?
There's no alcohol allowed aboard ships.
Okay. How do you compare the Exxon Valdez enforcement of this policy to other vessels?
I don't think I could make a comparison.
Okay. How is it enforced? Is it room searched, or are rooms only searched when someone has been caught drinking, or how is it enforced on that vessel?
I've only been with Exxon a year and a half. I've never been on a ship where a room was searched or bags were searched as people were coming aboard.
After the vessel grounded, you were informed of the grounding. Were you given any guidelines or instructions, or did you have to do anything?
No.
Did you go back to bed?
Well, I stayed up for a little while longer, and then I went to my room.
And when did you have to go back on watch again?
At 8 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to go back a little. When did you get up on Thursday morning, the morning of the accident, the morning before the accident?
Around 7.
Okay. And did you keep your normal watch routine, 8
yes.
to 12? What do you do after you get off watch?
I made phone calls and read.
I'm sorry, you're correct. We're in port, that's right.
Right. Made phone calls and I read.
Okay, did you have any work that afternoon on 12?
No.
Did you plan to go ashore in Valdez that day?
We had planned, but didn't go.
When you say we, who is that?
My watch partner and I had planned to go to. Okay.
As a result of the grounding, has the watch routine changed any?
I'm off the ship. I was off the ship shortly after. I don't know if anything has changed.
Did you get any sleep before the vessel departed on Thursday evening?
Before we left Thursday?
Right.
I may have taken a nap in the afternoon.
Is there anything special you do in port for handling cargo or assisting the mate who's loading the vessel?
I don't understand what you mean by special.
You just stand your watch and it's with the cargo loading, you don't do any maintenance or anything else?
No, no maintenance.
What are the? Do you have any recreational activities that you have?
We had a gym. We had a gym and reading, movies.
What do you usually do with your time between 12 noon and 8 p.m. When the ship is on the way?
Well, usually in the afternoon I try to work.
And, you work at sea, but you don't work in port, or how does that work?
Right. Well, sometimes there's jobs in port, but there's no maintenance. We can't do any, you know, a lot of maintenance we can't do alongside the fuel dock.
Okay. Well, you've been working on Exxon tankers. Have you experienced any notable fatigue or felt tired enough that your performance was impaired when you went on watch?
I suppose.
Does it happen often? Or?
It doesn't happen often with me, but I'm sure it happens often.
Have you seen any mates or engineers doing work on the Exxon Valdez that would normally be done by unlicensed crew members?
I don't recall.
Have any mates or engineers ever complained to you about feeling tired or being overworked?
Sure.
Can you describe what they said?
No.
Did you notice anything after the vessel grounded and the pumpman told you the vessel had grounded? Did you notice anything happening with the vessel? Was it moving in any way, or did you smell anything?
Well, I went out on deck and shined a light over the side because I was told that he said that we'd hold some tanks, and I looked to see if there was oil in the water, and I could smell the crude oil fumes.
And then after that, what did you do?
I went to my room. There wasn't anything I could do.
How heavy were those fumes? Was it like when you're loading the ship at the dock, or was it stronger?
It was
than that?
Heavier than that.
Would you have been afraid to light a match?
We don't light matches on the ship at all.
When you were on helm, when Mr. Ratke was up on the bow, did you hear any reports from him about ice or any conversations about ice?
No.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Questioning by William Woody, of one of the helmsmen.
No, I do not.
There are basically two able-bodied seamen who are standing the watch.
We have no questions.
Thank you.
His companion would be Harry Radke. He's up next.
What is Exxon Shipping's reputation as an employer?
It's very good.
Are there a lot of seamen working for other companies that are trying to get on with Exxon?
I think so.
How long did it take you to get employed by Exxon after you first applied?
About 2 weeks. I was in the right place at the right time.
Are you familiar with the steering alarms on the Exxon Valdez?
No.
Do you know if it has a follow-up alarm to it?
I've never heard it.
I think that's about it. Thank you.
Dr. LaRisha.
Mr. Cleary. Do you recall being interviewed by an NTSB person on March 28th?
Yes.
Do you recall at that time you told the interviewer that, quote, when asked how strictly alcohol is controlled aboard the Exxon Valdez, you responded that the vessel was stricter than some and looser than others. Is that a misquote?
It possibly is. I've read the same thing in the interview that I've got, and I don't recall saying those exact words.
Well, I'm asking you now, how strictly is alcohol controlled on the Exxon Valdez?
Probably not any different than any others.
Any different than any others. And you worked, I think, 3 or 4 years for other companies before you got on with Exxon. Is that true?
10.
Okay. And so what? How strictly was alcohol controlled on the others?
Well, with the others, I was with government. On government ships, and they had someone at the gangway that occasionally would check baggage as it came aboard.
And did Exxon have that as well?
No.
Okay. On the other ships, as well as the Exxon ships, did you ever know of anyone who managed to get alcohol on board?
Yes.
Back to when Captain Hazelwood ordered you to come to 180 degrees and put it on the mic. You gave two different answers. Who actually actuated the autopilot at this time?
Who put it on?
Yeah.
I did.
And you did this by pushing one button?
Right. Two buttons, actually.
Two buttons?
Well, the second button doesn't have to be pushed.
Is there an activate button on this autopilot control?
The gyro button.
Is there an enter button?
An answer button?
Enter.
Accept.
Are you certain there's not an activate button, an enter button, and a third accept button?
No. I'm not certain.
You're not certain.
I was showed how to do it, and I did it the way I was showed.
How do you enter the course when you're activating this autopilot?
With the wheel. There's a readout on a screen, a digital readout.
Can you activate it or enter the course other than by using the wheel?
I don't know.
You don't know. You said you were showed how to do it. When were you showed how to do it?
Several months ago, when I first came aboard the ship.
Several months ago, and yet...
Well, in January.
Okay, who showed you how to do it then?
The third mate.
And was this Mr. Cousins at the time?
No.
Okay, why you figure a third mate would show you how to do this if it wasn't normal for the helmsman to do this?
I asked him.
Okay. You asked him and he showed you, but you're not sure whether there are two or three buttons.
No, I said there's two.
There's at least
The accept button doesn't have to be pushed. I was told it doesn't have to be, but...
Okay, is the button to disengage the autopilot one of these two or three buttons?
No.
Or it's a third or fourth button?
It's a third button.
Okay. Is it right next to these other ones?
I don't know what you mean by right next to.
How close is it to the other two or three buttons?
A foot.
A foot. And you say you have you ever personally taken the vessel off of the mic, off the autopilot?
I don't recall.
Did you say, I didn't quite understand you, you said you weren't sure how much pressure it took on that third or fourth button, the deactivate button, to take it off?
No.
Okay. When Captain Hazelwood told you to come to 180, what kind of command did he give you?
He said, come to 180 and put it on the mic.
Okay. Did he tell you how much rudder to use?
I don't remember.
What would be the normal circumstance? Would the officer at the con tell you to use so many degrees rudder or tell you to come to a course?
It makes a difference to how big a course change it is, how quickly they want to get to it.
Okay, in the case of a 20-degree course change, what would be the standard practice?
That's hard to say. It would make a difference to where we would be and what we were doing.
Okay. When you changed from 219 to 200 and then later from 200 to 180, how much rudder did you use to make these corrections?
I really don't remember.
How much rudder would you normally use on a 20-degree course change?
Probably 10 to 15 degrees.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Clear. That's all, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Dr. Reich. Captain Deppe?
Mr. Chairman, we have no questions.
Thank you. Mr. Colucciello.
Have you ever had occasion to use the emergency steering button on the console?
No.
Do you know how to use it?
No.
Could you characterize for us, if you were given an order of right 10 degrees rudder and you had been steady and under the conditions you were steering on under that night, if you had to, say, give us a count of when you would begin to see the bow begin to turn after you had put, say, 10 degrees right rudder on, could you describe how the response of the ship would be, how long it would take before you'd see it beginning to turn, and at about what rate it would be turning, like, say, how many degrees per minute, or if you want to use a count, to give us a feel for what kind of response you get from putting 10 degrees right rudder onto a ship, on that ship.
At what speed?
At the ship, the speed you were doing, the speed you were doing that evening, which I think was probably around maneuvering speed.
I would expect probably to see it coming around in 15 or 20 seconds.
It would be perceptible, start to perceptibly move off the 180, say, or whatever heading you were, in about, you say, 15?
20.
15 or 20 seconds, you begin to see the bow move. And would that then settle down to a constant swing rate? And can you describe how fast that swing would be?
I would think that it would speed up.
And it would speed up to, and then could you say, you could give us a count, like if you were watching the gyro, mm-hmm. and let's say you started out with 100 and it's now swinging, how fast would you see those numbers changing?
Jeez, that's...
well, I know it's difficult, really but you have a feel for it because you've gone through this many right. times. How fast does it swing? Is it go 100 and all of a sudden it's 105? Or is it 100, 101?
I would guess after it starts its swing, maybe a degree a second.
About a degree. Okay, that's what I wanted to find. Thank you.
Mr. Armstrong.
just one clarification. When Mr. Kacharian was asking you during the scenario where the master had taken you through the three course changes, the 219 to 200 and then steady up on 180 and put it on mic, and your response to Mr. Kacharian's question, was that somewhat unusual? And you said, yes, it was. Mm-hmm. Why did you respond that way as to being unusual? Would you amplify a little, in other words, from your experience, why would it be unusual to put it on mic during that portion of the...
Well, we were still inside the sound.
Inside the entire Prince William Sound?
Yes.
Do you think that would be unusual?
It seemed to be.
Had you had experience... on previous trips where The vessels were generally hand-steered throughout the arm and then further down all the way to Hinchinbrook. Is that what you're saying? Why would they not use the autopilot? Are you saying it'd be unusual because of the conditions, the weather conditions, or
well, I think it's night. You have better control of the ship. You have to make some course changes. You have better control of the ship when it's in hand steering.
Why?
As far as making course changes and avoiding anything in the water.
Why does the ship control better on hand steering versus gyro steering?
Why would it?
Yes, sir.
Well, you would have instantaneous reactions on the wheel to the rudder.
You mean rather?
Or you would
than
have to take it in and out of, you know, off the gyro.
As a helmsman or quartermaster and the various names you go by, if the mate gives you a steering correction and it's on autopilot, you then respond and take it off autopilot, change the course, and then put it back on.
The mate would normally do that. If it was on autopilot, the mate would normally make a course change on the...
All right, thank you.
Just following to Mr. Armentrout's question, can you override the gyro, the autopilot, by hand steering?
Will it override it?
Without punching or any buttons or...
I don't think so. I don't...
I mean, if you turn with turning the wheel, would you extra
turning
degrees,
the,
five
turning
degrees?
The wheel, as far as I know, doesn't override it. There's a lever, I think it's called an NFU or something, that overrides it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Clare. I have a 4:25. We'll take a 15-minute break. We'll be back to hear Mr. Paul Radke. 15 minutes, please. Watch my lips. 15 minutes.
Well, he really meant it last time. He started right at 20 minutes after 2 o'clock. So maybe Mr. Lee Dickinson will continue to run this set of hearings with an iron hand. You're listening to live coverage of a hearing, a Board of Inquiry hearing, public hearing at the Captain Cook Hotel in Anchorage into the wreck of the Exxon Valdez. I'm Steve Heimel, and with me is Bruce Meltzer. This afternoon, things seem to have slowed a bit, Bruce, don't they? It seems that we've begun to get into more of the technical details and a little bit less of the really spicy, exciting, and almost emotional, if you can characterize as that type of testimony that we heard this morning.
That's certainly true. This morning with Greg Cousins on the stand, we were really hearing and feeling what it was like to be on the bridge of the Exxon Valdez at the time that the wreck happened. And Cousins painted a picture of a man who was at the helm trying to make course corrections, was unsuccessful in doing those, and called the captain on the phone, and ship slammed into the rocks. And now we're going through, and during the beginning of the day, the investigators started leading down lines of questioning that could start shooting holes in his story and painting him as a man with perhaps inexperienced, someone who might have been over his head, might have made some poor judgments. And now the kind of witnesses that we're seeing this afternoon, they're trying to provide the backup information for that.
Yeah, we're getting a lot more technical information. We've also, however, put some important pieces into the puzzle. We're now hearing from, for the rest of the day, we'll be hearing from the four people who were standing watch and actually had their hands on the wheel or were doing the lookout duty. We can expect to see the timetable be pinned down more. We did earlier this afternoon hear from the pilot of the vessel, who was very defensive, I think you'd have to say, of Joe Hazelwood. Captain Murphy said that he'd known Hazelwood for years. This was the first time he had smelled alcohol on his breath. He said he didn't appear to be acting unusual. However, it's worthy of note that as far as we can tell from the timetable, the captain was absent from the bridge for a significant length of time during which they were going through Valdez Narrows. And that is a treacherous passage, as everyone knows. Murphy had to admit that this was very unusual for the captain not to be on the bridge at the time of going through the Narrows.
And Murphy said that he usually likes and is usually standard practice for the captain to be on the bridge. He said, and when it all comes down, this is the captain's ship, and really in essence, a pilot, while they may be highly skilled, they are hired hands, and the captain still retains control of the vessel. And so that was one place where we've started to see some other places where people have been casting questions about Hazelwood's judgment. Earlier in the day, we heard investigators pushing and probing, questioning whether or why Hazelwood allowed a mate who was not certified to be driving his tanker, why there was only one officer on deck when there should have been two, and why he pulled a lookout from the bow of the boat down to back near the bridge, almost 800 feet away, at a time when they were looking for ice floes and trying to get around what was a navigational hazard, and such a navigational hazard that the captain deemed it important enough to leave both of the inbound and outbound shipping lanes and divert way over to the side, over toward Busby Island and eventually onto Bligh Reef.
Yeah, we should point out that Murphy did say from that predicament of being a beam of Busby light and a mile away, there shouldn't be any problem steering away from there. And that leads us to the question of the gyro or the autopilot or what we're now hearing called put it on the mic. The idea of when was the autopilot turned on, when was it turned off, and did that create that very straight as an arrow course that we can clearly see. We're beginning to get a little bit of indication that that the autopilot could have been a factor in this.
And that certainly started out earlier with Cousins, and now that investigators are really trying to pinpoint this fact and find out what happened, we heard Cousins describe how he called for 10-degree right turn and nothing happened. Then he called for 20-degree right turn and nothing happened. Then he called for a hard right, and that's when he ran aground. And
but of course, he also says that he turned off the autopilot. He turned the gyro off long ago, while the captain, right after the captain left.
And yet, the on the countervailing side of that, there is what now has been called a 5-minute gap. But there's a gap between when he supposedly turned it off and asked for his turns, and when in fact the turns were actually made. And so there is some evidence pointing, or at least questions, pointing toward what is happening with this autopilot. And that is something where we will see lots more questions on that. And if it starts to get very detailed about what button turns it on and what button turns it off, that's where the investigators are going, because they want to know who was responsible for shutting that off and whether, in fact, it was done.
Well, we're on a short break of about 15 minutes, and I believe it's time to turn it back to our member stations who are carrying these hearings live. This is a joint project of radio station KSK and the Alaska Public Radio Network. It is a live coverage of the public hearings regarding the marine accident involving the Exxon Valdez in Valdez, Alaska, of March 24th, 1989. I'm Steve Heimel. With me is Bruce Melzer, and this is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.
Console.
Okay, and what is that button have a label on it or a name?
Helm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it? Do you have to press it hard to activate it, or do you, to make?
Well, you
it
have
work?
To press it harder than you do when going from hand into gyro. Okay. Those type of buttons are similar to what you would see on a microwave oven, just a real light touch. The engaging from autopilot to hand steering is a spring-loaded button, and you have to depress it maybe a centimeter or so.
Okay. Thank you. How many times have you been on watch going into Valdez on Exxon vessels?
On watch, I would say 3 times. I can't be certain of that.
And how many times you've been on watch while the vessel was in Prince William Sound?
I would say 3 times.
During those trips, was it common practice to keep the helm in manual or in automatic steering?
During the times that I might have been on the wheel, I always had it in hand steering.
Hand steering. When you're on watch in Prince William Sound as lookout, where do you normally stand that position? On the bow or in the wheel, in the bridge?
On one arrival that I recall, inbound Cape Hinchinbrook, I was on the wing, and I believe I came off lookout shortly after coming into the sound. On another occasion, coming into Valdez Arm, I was on the bow.
Is there any reason to put someone on the bridge wing as opposed to the bow?
Well, in the open water, out on the sound, the lookout on the bow would be more exposed to the weather. That could be spray, wind, and cold. Okay. So there might be a little more protection out on the wing.
How long have you sailed with Captain Hazelwood before this last trip?
30 days.
30 days. And how long had you been on the Valdez before the accident?
45 days.
On March 23rd, you were on watch. Your watch partner was Mr. Clare, and you were on the 20 to 2400 watch. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Could you describe the events during your watch? What watches you stood, when you stood them?
Are you referring to the morning watch or the evening watch?
The evening watch, the 20 to 2400.
We were called out prior to 2000 at 19:30 approximately to secure the deck for sea. I can't remember exactly when our undocking began. I guess it would have been maybe 20:45. At that point, I was at the stern, taking in the stern lines. When we had completed all bringing in all the lines on the stern, I then proceeded to the bridge to assume my wheel watch. And I guess that would have been about 2100.
Who was at the stern with you?
The third mate, Greg Cousins, Maureen Jones, and Robert Kagan.
Now, when you went up to the wheelhouse, who was in the wheelhouse?
When I arrived, the pilot was there, and the first mate,
okay. And
the captain.
Where were they standing, do you know?
I believe the first mate was in the navigation area, and I can't recall where the pilot and the master were.
After leaving the dock, do you recall how long the master stayed on the bridge?
I can't be sure.
Is that because you were steering, or is it because you couldn't see because of darkness, or what?
Well, I would say a combination of those things. First of all, steering is, you know, you're concentrating on that, and you may not be aware of what's going on around you in the wheelhouse. The wheelhouse is dark. I do recall discussing with the third mate at around 21:30 whether or not my watch partner and I were going to be relieving each other at 10 to 10. And at that time, I believe the master was still there because I think he commented about that.
How long do you stand time on the helm and lookout?
If you're splitting a four-hour watch, it would be two and two.
You don't go one and one and one and one again?
No.
Okay. When you're leaving the dock from the terminal, the pilot is handling the vessel, is that correct?
That's correct.
And you're getting your orders from him, or are they relayed through the mate or the master?
Generally, upon casting off lines, The pilot and the master are out on the bridge wing, and orders from the pilot are relayed by the master to the mate, generally standing next to the wheelsman.
Some kind of disturbance going on here.
Ladies and gentlemen, I really don't know what's going on here. This is Greg Herring, candidate for office of governor of Alaska and the next governor of the state. I don't know if you see this way. Herring's the name for governor.
And a would-be candidate for governor is rushed up to the microphones,
sir.
And then rushed on out of the room, and we're back to questioning of one of the helmsmen by Leon Kachurian, a member of the technical panel of the National Transportation Safety Board. Paul Radke is the witness being questioned. He was relieved by the man we heard from before, Harry Clar.
When someone leaves the bridge going through the inside, do they have to go through a door in the wheelhouse to go below?
Would you repeat that, please?
When someone wants to leave the bridge, the wheelhouse, to go below from the inside, how would they leave the wheelhouse?
You could stay on the inside of the ship, passing through the chart room and then down a ladder from there. Or there are also ladders on the outside where you could come up to the bridge wing and then into the wheelhouse.
Can you hear doors closing or slamming when they leave the bridge?
You can hear them.
But you didn't hear any of that happening?
I didn't notice anything like that, no.
Now, when you were relieved by Mr. Clair on the helm, who was on the bridge at that time, do you remember?
The third mate, Greg, and the pilot.
And what time was this?
I was relieved at 10 to 11.
Okay. And when you get relieved, where do you go? You take a break?
Generally,